It's the middle of the month, and you know what that means.
There was only two more weeks left in sweep, so we really need to play to the 18 to 49 crowd?
No, it's time for another episode of Allopod. November is a busy month, and we have a lot to get through, including the evils of self-publishing, the myth surrounding the phrase ye old shop, a new game called Real Headline or Tabloid, and of course, Andrew Burton's Technology Haiku. But first, crank your stereos up to the whippin' loud setting and rock out to Schrodinger's Cat Paradox by C-Jax here on Allopod. So, Schrodinger's Cat Paradox. You can see, I think, where that name comes from.
Oh, yeah, totally.
If you know what Schrodinger's Cat is. Phoenix has a great quote on his blog, a friend of mine, Phoenix, in Japan. He has random quotes on his blog, and one of them that says, what is it? It's like Schrodinger's cat is dead, and then there's the word not, and it blinks. So it's like, is dead, is not dead, is dead, is not dead. Good
Phoenix
physics joke.
Phoenix is good fun.
So, November's very busy. I have a lot of stuff going on.
Me too.
Especially one of the biggest things that's taking up my time right now is NaNoWriMo, the National Novel Writing Month. And I should be writing right now instead of doing a podcast. But
yeah.
I'm so dedicated to the podcast.
I really wish I could do it this month, but I can't with school and work and weddings.
Yeah. Hey, don't look at me like that. I have to plan my wedding.
It's not your wedding. It's another one.
Yeah, well.
Anyway.
So that's one of the things I'm working on. We didn't bother to schedule an interview this month because I figured it would take too much time.
Yeah.
And it would require a couple of different meetings and stuff like that. And really, just we have stuff to catch up on.
Yeah,
one of the things to catch up on, Emily, in the very first episode of Allopod, if you've been listening that far back, and we thank you if you have. And if not, we still love you, but go back and listen to them all.
Yeah.
You're not a true Allopod. What should our people be called? We'll just call them minions.
Okay.
Because I don't feel like coming up with a new word.
We'll come up with one next month.
Okay. Send in your suggestions for what you want to be called, Allopod minions, to podcast@alifelessordinary.com. And we'll see. Maybe we'll have a little contest.
Oh, that would be good. I think that would work.
All right.
Yeah.
So there's a secret prize then that we're making up here. We'll figure out what it is and award it to whoever comes up with the best name next month.
I promise it won't be anything disgusting. Maybe that's too big of a promise.
No. Yeah.
I don't know, like a cup of our spit.
Where do you come up with this stuff?
I have no idea.
No, it, really won't, it won't be that. I will refuse to do that. It might be a cup of Emily's spit, but I guarantee no spit of mine.
Well, you know what I was thinking of, it was, made me think of that, was you and Chris's, yours and Chris's adventure in eBay to sell farts in a jar. That's
right. We never did that. We should have. I wonder yeah. now, with eBay's, like, you know, pretty, they have rules about you can't sell parts of your body. I wonder if that would work.
Yeah.
I suppose it's technically a flammable gas. You wouldn't be able to ship it legally.
That's true. All yes, that methane.
The fart jars. Yeah. Somewhere Chris is laughing his ass off right now. So if you'd have let me finish my sentence.
All right,
so
yeah.
If I would have let me finish my sentence.
Okay.
God, what are we, 3 minutes into this one already? Not even 3 minutes. self-publishing, that was it.
Yeah,
self-publishing. You had mentioned how self-publishing is bad, and we're going to talk about that today.
Yeah.
We have a new game, Real Headliner Tabloid, that I'm only half stealing from another podcast.
Yeah, everyone does it.
Inspired by.
There you go.
There we go. We have a myth to dispel.
Yeah, I have a good myth.
A good myth. Shall we start? Let's start with the myth.
The myth. The ye olde.
Jump right into it.
The ye olde shop. So the myth about this is
ye olde shoppy.
Yeah, the ye olde shoppy. Anything that says ye olde X shop.
Yeah, insert thing here.
Yeah, it's not really It's not technically correct to say ye. It should be actually the, because when during the Norman invasion and the French were taking over England at the time, you know, around 1066 after the Battle of Hastings.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I have no idea, Emily.
Well, this will inspire you and our listeners to go and look it up and learn something.
I like learning, though.
Yeah. So, anyway, the French were taking over England, and in doing so, the scribes were also taking over, and they kind of changed.
The rise of the scribes.
Yeah, pretty
That'd make
much.
A great movie, wouldn't it?
French scribes were taking over writing for England, and
back when the French could win a war.
Yes, exactly. Well, that was with the help of a Dane, so it didn't really count.
All right.
And William the Conqueror wasn't really French. Anyway, so they changed the handwriting during the Middle English period, and what used to be the thorn. I describe it as a PB. You'll have to look at the picture to understand what thorn is. It makes the th sound. And the th sound, which I'm sure most people are like,
that sound is called a thorn.
Well, no.
The character that
the character the in Middle English and Old English is called a thorn. And it's from the Futhork, which is...
The who what, huh?
The Futhork, which is the proper
How
name.
How do you spell that?
I don't... I can look it up, but I can't
wow,
tell you.
Wow, that's a weird word.
Yeah, it's actually the proper name for the runic alphabet.
Huh.
And it comes from the first four letters of the runic alphabet, or
like
Futhork.
Kind of like how QWERTY keyboards are so called because the top row
yeah.
is QW.
Kind of like how alphabet is called alphabet because of alpha beta.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that like an amazing
Look
fact that you
that.
Never thought of? It's See, so freaking obvious, and no one ever thought about it.
At what point in kindergarten did they choose not to teach us this?
I don't know. I just recently learned it this year, and I was like so amazed. I was like, of
Man.
Course,
Yeah,
alphabet.
That it makes perfect sense once
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, so anyway, the thorn is from the Futhork, which is the runic alphabet, and it represents the th sound. It's the character. And the th sound, which I'm sure no one knows the difference, but there's a difference between th and th. Trust me, there is.
I can hear a difference, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, one's a theta sound. The other one we call the satanic symbol sound because the symbol in phonetic, symbol in the phonetic alphabet is kind of like thorny, satanic looking, but it's actually an Old English character. So the French were writing the thorn and decided to write it as a Y. I don't know why they decided to make it a Y, but they did.
So it looks like a P and a B kind of stuck together.
Yeah, it looks like a P and a B at the same time. The little round part is in the middle, so you're like, it looks like a B, but there's a bottom, so it looks like a P.
Oh, I know what that looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I use for, you know, because, you know, in when you're making smiley faces at people out of, like, the equal
yeah.
sign and thing, I never use the letter P. I use that thing.
Yeah, it's called a thorn.
The little tongue is sticking out in the middle.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what it looks like.
Yeah, don't you get excited when you learn these things?
Shit, I don't have to look it up. Now I can just include one in the show notes.
Yeah,
oh,
there you go.
Brilliant. All right.
So the French scribes decided to start writing it as Y, and then the word ye became interchangeable for thee and ye, ye being the second person pronoun, you know, ye old whore, basically, you know, that word. The Y, they started putting Y before it, and it became ye, but it was always pronounced thee. So when you see a sign that says ye old shop, you should say the old shop, because the Y should be a th sound, not a ye sound. It's a fricative.
Ah, yes, the fricative. What the hell?
I could look it up and explain what a fricative is, but it's going to take too much time.
I wish I'd have taken these classes when I was at Eastern.
I know, they're just, I'm fascinated by language.
My major just didn't allow for it.
Yeah.
You were smart, you switched majors.
I did.
No, wait, you failed out of.
No, I did not fail out.
You just quit.
I quit. I never failed a single class.
Unlike some of half the class,
although
over 80% of
it depends on what you count as failed. Because,
that's true.
Failing is technically a zero, or like a zero point.
Well,
or 0.9 or something.
It's different at some schools.
Yeah.
I think we had a pretty loose interpretation of passing at Eastern. So.
And I think the lowest grade I got was a 1.7.
And that was
film.
That...
that was that class.
That class that we shall not discuss.
No. Evil
or woman. Not be discussed. So we have this ye thing.
Yeah, the
not
ye thing.
Real.
It's not real. It's a pseudo-anachronism.
What's the character that they were screwing up? What was it called?
It was the Thorn.
The Thorn, that's it. It doesn't look anything like the letter Y.
No, it doesn't, but for some reason their handwriting got all screwy and weird and
it is the
cursive. It was the cursive thing, I think.
Oh, well, cursive screws everything up. That's why I don't write in cursive.
Well, yeah, because cursive is shorthand.
Why do people... Why? Why was I ever taught that? I don't use it.
My
signature
know.
Isn't
I,
in cursive.
I actually studied the history of
then
handwriting.
Again, my signature's a bunch of squiggles, so...
Yeah. I kind of actually got interested in the history of handwriting, and cursive was originally, you know, for scribes so they could write quickly and not have to pick up their hand as much.
Well, that
makes
sense.
Thus, you know, their hand wouldn't cramp as often. That's where it came from. And it really wasn't meant to be the language, the script that you read. It was, you know, you're supposed to have the normal separated letters so you can see it. But for some reason, I don't know who decided it. But some freaking American, I don't know if it was American or not, somebody decided that that's what students needed to be taught about third grade and forced to write in only until, sixth grade?
Well, until we started using computers for everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that's absurd.
Isn't it?
I think I should stage a rebellion with my child. No, it's stupid. Nobody uses it. That's dumb.
Yeah. I don't know. I always thought it was retarded. And I was so happy when we got into middle school and we were allowed to not write in cursive anymore.
Yeah.
Cursive's
evil. That's dumb. Speaking of writing and things like that, you know, like I said, I'm doing NaNoWriMo, and eventually I'm going to have my finished novel. Now, I'll give you a little background on my novel here for those who haven't been following, which is probably most people, and pretty much everybody listening. I think probably like 3 people listening are going to know what I was up to. But last year, it was the first year I participated. I found out about it through Phoenix, actually, who we mentioned earlier.
Yay, Phoenix.
And about 5 days before it started, it begins on November 1st every year, because November is National Novel Writing Month.
Mm-hmm.
About 5 days before November, I found out about it. And then about 2 days before November, I actually decided to do it.
Hmm.
So I guess that would be October 29th. This was last year.
Yeah.
So I did it. I was like, all right, great. 50,000 words, 30 days, no problem. And the idea behind this is that actually writing your novel is the hardest part of writing a novel.
Yeah.
And so the idea is quantity, not quality. Get 50,000 words down in 30 days, go back and edit it later.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, I can do this. I can make this. It's about 1,667 words every day if you're going to stay on track. And it is hard. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it at all. It's difficult to do. But if you have a clear idea and an outline and, you know, like a beat list or something like that, it's actually quite easy. If you have, you know, point A and Z and every point in between.
Mm-hmm.
If you have point A and point Z, it's a little tricky because you're trying to figure out, where are the twists and turns as we go. Unfortunately, when I started this, I had point A, and that's about it. And so finding, you know, an end point for my story, trying to get there, trying to find anything to throw in there was really screwing with me. And I had actually an idea that I still think is really cool, but it's grounded in the story world took place in our actual world.
Mm-hmm.
And so writing it, I got really bogged down in details, and, you know, it was too difficult, you know, to make my word count and be accurate.
Yeah.
In hindsight, I probably should have just written it and then been accurate later, but whatever. I didn't do it the right way. And and I don't think I could have written it, not without an outline, which I certainly didn't have. So I started writing this other thing. And this is basically the same problem. I got bogged down in details because mm-hmm. I set it in this world. So I decided, forget it. I'm just going to start writing dream sequences. And I'll just write them until they end, and then I'll move on to the next one. And I got through about, three or four dream sequences until I found one that just kept going. And I kept going with it and going with it. And then about, I want to say a third to half the way through my 50,000 words, probably more like a third. Well, no, maybe it was about halfway. I came up with a good plot for this story and started to write that in. And so what I'm doing this year, because I don't have as much time, I am very busy mm-hmm. with work and things like that, and, you know, podcasting.
Yeah.
What I'm doing this year is I wrote out, took the story as I finished it. I did complete 50,000 words last year. I actually ended up with 50,008.
Ooh.
Yes. That good 8-word buffer, just to be sure.
Overachiever.
Yeah, you know me. I'm sure everyone can tell by my laughter that's not the case.
Yeah.
And, you know, Emily's thick tone of sarcasm. But yeah, so I made it to my 50,000 words, and this year what I'm doing is I've taken the plot as it exists, and I wrote that out as a plot outline, mm-hmm. and then I rewrote that with what I felt should happen in the story and what I wanted to have happen and the different plot points. And actually, it's looking like about 50% of the novel is going to be rewritten this year. Mm-hmm. And so I am more or less still on track. I'm about 2,000 words behind at the moment, 2,000 or 3,000 words behind, which is not a problem. I mean,
yeah,
it's easy, and we have, you know, I have a lot of time to get it done, to catch that up. It's just I have to make sure that I stay more or less caught up, because I can do a big push at the end.
Yeah.
If I absolutely have to, which is what I did last year. I sort of forfeited sleep and in favor of doing this, which is fine. I mean, I don't mind that. It's once a year. That's not a problem.
Yeah, it's good to do that.
No, I think it's good. And something, writing a novel is something that I've wanted to do for quite a while now. And it's just one of those things where if it weren't for this, I don't know if I would have done it.
Yeah.
Or at least not, I wouldn't have done it now. And I think it's good now because it's going to give me a lot of time to write a bunch of, not necessarily crap novels, but not necessarily good stuff either. It's going to get me thinking in terms of plot and story and character development and story arcs and things like that, and which is, you know, I mean, we were film majors. The mm-hmm. the last creative writing I did prior to last year's novel was I wrote a script. Totally different formatting, different ways of having your story set up and whatnot. And so it's good, I think, to get back to this because... Well, I learned in college that I'm not a very good screenwriter. I arguably had the worst script in the entire class, but I passed.
There you
and
go.
And that's all that matters.
You wrote the script. I didn't even make it that far.
Well, there you go. But yeah. There were other circumstances, like the class that we won't talk about.
Yeah. That class.
That class. It's shown up twice. There's going to be the trifecta, and we're going to have to talk
one
about it.
Yeah, one day they're going to be like, tell us about the class, and we'll have to sit them down and tell them a story. We'll make it very, you know, like...
If you want to know what happened in that class, email us at podcast@fsordinary.com.
We'll write a little children's book and tell it as if it were a children's book.
I won't be able to illustrate it, though. I can't. No. I can't draw with a damn.
Me neither. We'll have to hire somebody.
So anyway, but no, it's something that I think it's a really good thing. If you've ever wanted to write a novel, mm-hmm. check it out. I'm going to include a link to their website. And, you know, it's at this juncture, it's definitely too late to get started this year, but it's not too late this year to come up with a plot outline, come mm-hmm. up with a story, because, you know, as somebody who's done it 2 years now, and or who is doing it now for the second time, not having a plot outline last year, I think, really killed me. Not having a solid story, not having a good idea,
yeah.
you know, not even having an A to B, nothing. You know, I just went in there blind and started putting words down on the page, and it didn't work. Coming into it this year with a plot outline, with a point A to point B, with a climax. I didn't even have a climax. I made it to 50,000 words without a climax because I couldn't think of something. because the cat just kept, I kept going and going and going. Yeah. It's like, here's the climax. Oh, no, false climax, because I don't know how to end it, you know.
Yeah.
I just kept going and kept going because I couldn't come up with anything. So, you know, just having a plot outline would definitely help. So definitely, I mean, you can do that in 2 weeks. That's not a problem. Yeah. As long as you have a good story, you can come up with stuff. And
I would even suggest doing a short story now.
That's true. You know, and there's no one... You could certainly come up with a plot outline and write scenes or write...
Yeah.
You know, just, yeah, get into that habit and just try to exercise. I mean, it's halfway through the month. Do, you know, 20,000 words instead of 50. I mean, you know, but if you ever wanted to write... I mean, anybody can write. Anybody can write a novel. It might not be beautiful and well written and eloquent and stuff like that, but, you know, you can certainly move into that. You can learn to be that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the great things I've always heard is write what you know.
Exactly.
And I think I'm saying that's misinterpreted. You know, you don't have to, if you're like a, what's a good job? Well, I work at a TV station. So if you work at a TV station, like I do, you don't have to write about working at a TV station.
No.
Or editing videos, like, I mean, that's not what I'm writing about. I think what write what you know means is more like write, like, think about the kind of books you like to read and then write that. Because I like to read, if you read my novel and, like, a Terry Pratchett novel, you're going to see the similarities. Because I really like his types of novels.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, science fiction, if you like that. Or Harlequin romance novels. Or, you know, erotica. There's nobody saying you can't do that. In fact, there's a whole message board, a whole thread in the NaNoWriMo site that's all for erotica.
Yeah, erotica is actually a very popular internet novel.
It is. It's selling very well.
Yeah.
But nonfiction is actually what's selling the best right now, I've heard.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Maybe it just goes along with the whole, we're obsessed with reality and stuff and the whole reality TV thing.
But well, you also have to look at, nonfiction's a huge category.
This is true. There is a lot to write about.
Technically, you know, gardening books are nonfiction.
Wow, that's a good point.
And cookbooks political books by psychotic news ladies.
Holding the grudge there, are we?
No. There's no particular Fox anchor that I dislike with a passion of 5 million suns.
5 million suns?
Yes.
Are those suns like our sun?
Or? Yeah, like burning. Yeah.
All right. Earth, well, I mean, suns. As opposed to like other stars out there.
I don't know if there was a bigger sun.
How come our sun is a sun, but all the other suns are stars? That doesn't make sense. Why isn't ours why don't we call ours the star?
Because it was bigger and we thought it was different when we named it.
Yeah, but we can fix that. I mean, we're allowed to correct things.
People are lazy.
No, that's a good point.
Really? Are you going to want to be like, the star is bright today? Which star? The big star.
Well, no, because you call the other ones stars and this one's the star.
That's true, the star.
Or why don't we just give it a different name, like Steve? Hey, Steve, how's it going? You know.
I think we should give it a name.
If you have a good name for the sun, email it to podcast@lifelessordinary.com.
I like Steve. Because it's kind of like Steve Carell and Steve Colbert and Steve Buscemi. Everybody loves a Steve.
Actually, that's true. I'm trying to think if I've ever met a Steve I don't like.
I do. I have one. Well, his name was Steven, but still, could have been Steve.
Oh, yeah, could have been Steve. No, but see, I think that's too common. It needs to be something a little less common. Because, you know, you could be like, hey, there's the Steve, and some guy will turn around like, ugh.
True.
You know,
true.
No, not you, guy who's apparently named Steve. Sorry.
It should be something like...
Phobos.
Well, that's a good one.
Isn't that actually someone's name in some literary thing?
I can't think of it, but I know. Yeah, it is. I was thinking, you know, something like Septimus or my favorite, ooh, Scrope. That is a character's name. And I think
if you name it Scrope, you're opening up the sun to a lot of...
That is the name of a legitimate character in a Virginia Woolf novel. His name is Scrope Purvis.
Well, it is Virginia Woolf.
That's true.
But the point of my whole NaNoWriMo story, besides the fact that I'm busy...
Yeah.
Is that at the end I'm going to have a novel, albeit very amateurish, but I'll have a novel that I think it would be very cool to publish.
Yeah.
And one of the things you'd mentioned in our first episode of Allopod was how self-publishing is bad. And I was actually kind of taken aback when you first said that, because it was something I had looked into a little bit. And I was wondering why you had, like, what about self-publishing you dislike?
Well, I was a creative writing major. I have a BA in creative writing. And we're kind of taught there that, you know, self-publishing is... It's like, wow, anybody in there... That makes it that anybody and their brother can do it. And it takes... I think it takes away from the art of being published and being a writer. Not in that, you know, it would... Like, everyone who writes a novel's got to be brilliant. I just... If you are really serious about it and something you really want to do and be a professional at, self-publishing is not the way to go.
So your problem is just that it's not professional.
Yeah, because if later on you want to go to like Random House or, you know, Penguin or something, they're going to see, you're going to say, oh, I'm self-published. They're going to be like, well, whoop-dee-doo. Good for you. It's kind of on par with, you know, the band who... records their own album because they have GarageBand on their computer.
So it's like that band, you go to their show and you buy their album and they're like the perforation lines on the insert. I hate that. There's actually, we, a while back...
And you respect them less, don't you? Just a little bit.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
It's the same kind of feeling.
And the thing is, that's a really good point. It's a good analogy, I think, because I remember when Chris and I, at one point, we were helping out this one local musician and... They didn't have us handle the CD. Somebody else was dealing with it. I don't remember who, and I might be really offending a friend, but I mean, that's just the way it is. Because this is the truth. I mean, this is what I honestly believe. When we saw the CD for the first time, I was so disappointed because it wasn't on any sort of glossy paper.
Oh,
it was,
yeah.
It was, I don't remember what the stock of the paper was, if it was kind of heavier stock or whatnot, but there were definite perforations down the side, like it was some cookie cutter type of thing. It wasn't screen printed at all, the CD. It was like a label that they printed out and stuck on there. And it was just like, in my opinion, the design was really, really bad.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, it got the artist so, so excited because he had a product. He had a CD.
Yeah.
But it was just like, I was looking at it and I'm like, you know, for the price you paid, for maybe like a little bit more, we could have done something that was totally professional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I guess they had had some problems with these guys and stuff. And it was just like, hey, we offered to handle it, but if this is what you want, fine, you know. And
yeah, I would suggest that if you want your own book, I would find a friend who's interested in bookbinding, because that's a hobby. It's a good hobby, and a lot of people, amateurs, are very good at it, and you can have a nice, really bound copy of it, really nice bound copy of it, as opposed to self-publishing, where you have to buy X amount of, one, you have to buy X amount of copies, otherwise it's ridiculously expensive. It's insane. And then... Two, the qualities are kind of crappy because no one, you know, you can't really afford super nice quality for this stuff. So it's going to come off cross as like, you know, the psychotic pamphlet given out by neo-Nazis in Idaho.
In Idaho, huh?
Well, that is where they used to live.
Well, used to live, though.
Yeah, that's true. They moved. Okay, the psychotic neo-Nazis in Pennsylvania.
I don't know about those ones.
Well, they're the ones who used to live in Idaho.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they moved to Pennsylvania.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay, so what about like... these smaller publishing houses then that aren't like, you know, the big Penguin, Random House, that sort of thing.
Smaller presses are a good way to go.
For small runs.
Yeah, they'll do small runs. You get a very small advance. If one at all. It depends on how big the publishing house is. And like very small, it could be like $100 to...
Still, I mean,
yeah.
if you can put your book out there at $100 and make no more money on it, that's still pretty good.
And a lot of them will advertise in literary magazines and journals and other small press books. You'll get some advertisement that way. They'll get it into a couple bookstores, some independent bookstores. And there's the possibility that a huge company, because they do this, they look at them, a huge company will look at it and decide, hey, that's selling good, it's really good, and then they'll pick you up.
That's really cool.
So it's actually the better way to go than self-publishing. And there's a small market for every kind of book. I know more about the, you know, literary with the big L, which is confusing and strange why that's different. But I know about those ones, but I know there's small science fiction presses.
So what if somebody wants to just, you know, go for the gold straight away and try to submit to, like, one of the big boys?
Go through an agent. They won't talk to you.
Really?
No, they'll throw
you
it away.
You have to have an agent.
Yeah. Why, if you're going to go through the big boys, because they just don't want to deal with people on personal levels anymore.
I guess that makes sense. Would an agent, is the agent the kind of person who's going to read your manuscript and be like, don't bother?
Yeah. They are. They're going to read it. They're basically what the old editors used to be around the 50s and the turn of the century. They're going to work with you. They're going to make it the best that it can be for a particular market. They're going to tell you what market you're going to go into, what would be the best way to shop it around, and they'll shop it around to acquisition editors for you. And they'll try it. I mean, you have to pay them once you get... They get the money when you get paid, basically. And
so,
you know, 10% normal agent.
So now, this is something that I, you know, can't believe I'm about to say this. I was watching the Tyra Banks show today, and because it was on, and I should also say that we only get like 4 channels.
Yeah,
and it was the only good thing on. She had mentioned something that I'd never really thought of before, but that I think is extremely good advice, and that's that if you're trying to become a model, you know, that you need to get an agent, but you should never have to pay for anything.
No.
If your agent is like a real agent and they're a good agent, they'll wait, you know, they'll get paid when you get paid. And so is that the same thing then in literature?
Yeah, they'll get paid when you get paid. They should have enough clients that's and love it enough. And usually they have agency houses. It's along the same lines as acting and modeling agencies. They have companies and then you have the individual agent. And you just got to do some research. They have books on it. Part of the writer's guide.
Mm-hmm.
Books that come out every year, part of that has agent lists in it, and it's really good. I have a friend who shops some agents. He hasn't unfortunately been able to find anyone yet for it, but he's just gonna keep tweaking it until he finds one. And really good friend of mine, Jonathan Johnson, who I hope we have on the show
eventually. We really should. He's awesome. I love
yeah
him.
He knows cool so much more about this because he actually went through this not too long ago. With he had an agent, they shopped it around. Unfortunately, the big houses didn't want it, so the agent says, well, we tried, good luck, and they give it back to you. I mean, they don't, there's no attachment to it, to where you, and then he went on and went through, I think, University of Nebraska press, which is a very good press. University of Nebraska, excellent for Western genre writers, and that's like Western as in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest, not you know, like shoot 'em up gun westerns. But there are small presses for that too. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's what you want to do. It's
so. Would an agent like give you some advice?
No, they do. They totally they go through it, they edit it, they mark it up, they send it back to you. They deal with you through faxes, emails, on the phone, and if you're lucky enough to live near them, they'll deal with you in person.
Oh, that's so cool. So they're almost like a pre-editor.
They are. They're basically, that's their role now, is the pre-editor. And editors don't nowadays, editors at big firms don't tend to work with an author like they used to. The authors don't always have the same editor anymore. Like it used to be, oh, Hemingway had one editor and they worked really close together, and if they changed, you would notice a difference. There would be a difference if the editor changed. But
that's really interesting.
Yeah, they're not, they don't work that way anymore. Oh. Too big business now.
Well, we'll have to see if we can get Dr. John in here to talk about not that Dr. John, everyone. It's John Johnson that we were talking about before.
Yeah.
I call him Dr. John because that's funny. But yeah, we'll have to see if we can get him on the show. He can talk about not only his works, but some of this stuff as well, because this is really interesting stuff. And
yeah,
it is. It's one of those things, like I said today to my fiance when we were watching Tyra, I said, you know, it's good that she points that out because it's the kind of thing that I wouldn't have known that. Like,
yeah.
If, you know, and actually I was sort of looking at some of the, in our NaNoWriMo, we have little sort of meetings where we all, we have little meetings where we all get together and talk about, you know, our progress so far and that sort of thing. And one of the things they talked about was finding publishing houses, and they talked about some of the small publishing places that are out there. And in looking at that sort of thing and some of the websites of these smaller publishers, they always say, oh, we're not a vanity publisher. We're not going to accept money from you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not going to demand money of you, rather. We're going to, you know, after your book sells.
No, you should never pay a publisher. Don't do that. They should pay you, and if paying you means they give you like 50 free copies of your book, that's paying you. I mean, that's better than nothing. You should never have to pay them.
See, and that's one of those things that nobody ever tells you. You wouldn't know that. I think that's a lot. I think a lot of the sort of less.
See, the ones that you pay, those are the sketchy ones that you're going to be like, yeah, that isn't that special, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. That's my rant and rave about self-publishing. I mean, it's not really ranting. I'm just,
well, you know,
it's kind of giving some advice, and not to put anyone down who does self-publish. I mean, it's an interesting it's an interesting thing. It's kind of reemerging. It used to be really popular in the 1800s. I mean, Walt Whitman published himself. Thoreau published himself. And Thoreau ended up with like 200 copies of a book in his, like, in Emerson's attic, basically, because, you know, Thoreau didn't have his own house. But we're not going to talk about them. I hate them. It's just too hard for me to wrap my mind around transcendentalists. Anyway, so... Yeah, so it's reemerging as a market because of advances in technology mm-hmm. and the internet's a huge driving force in that. And so maybe in a couple more years, maybe in the future, it'll be a good idea to self-publish. And, you know, if you do it now, then great. Maybe you're a pioneer and you're going to, like, fix all the problems with literary presses and big publishing houses.
So are you saying we should all get out there and change the world?
No, I'm okay. I'm too apathetic. Sorry.
Well, let's move on now.
But if that's your bag, good for you.
All right. Let's move on now to our new game. We're gonna try this out and see how it goes. It's called Real Headline or Tabloid, and we have a few headlines here. So what we'll do is we'll read the headline, and we have to try and decide if it's an actual headline is it referring to a real story. Or is this a made-up story, as you would see in, say, the Weekly World News or something like that?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So the first one here we have is Ostrich on Loose Tramples Car in Bid for Freedom. So what do you think? I'm not so sure an ostrich could trample a car.
Freedom from what?
Yeah. Well, that's like a zoo. One. Well, yeah, I guess okay. They have ostrich farms, though. I've seen ostrich. Well, no, I guess they're emu farms.
Oh, they have ostrich farms in Texas.
Do they?
Oddly enough, there are ostriches in Texas.
They're sand, right? Don't they bury their heads in sand? Is that even true? I bet that's one of those myths. I should
probably.
One thing I remember about ostriches is I saw Guinness Book of World Records. They had a picture of this guy with his hand on an ostrich's throat, spreading his hand out to show how flexible the neck is. And the point was that the ostrich held the world record as like animal with the stretchiest throat or something. He was like this
weird.
I mean, you should look through Guinness sometime. They have some weird freaking things. So anyway, the vote?
I'm gonna go no.
No? It is real.
Okay.
It apparently there was a runaway ostrich that eluded police for 3 hours and it attacked a Mercedes car. Somehow it got out of its pen and where did this happen even? I'm not sure where this happened. Let's see if I can... I have the article here. Oh, Cyprus.
Cyprus, huh?
Yeah. So, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, who knew? All right. So, okay, we have another one here. We have Norwegian woman gets 8 months in jail for giving an unwanted blowjob. I'm sorry, there's no such thing as an unwanted blowjob.
Yeah, that seems like something you could prevent. I don't see how some woman could force her head upon you. I mean, body, maybe.
Maybe if you're asleep.
But if you're asleep, then yeah.
I'm sorry, that's just a pleasant way to wake up. My vote would be crap. Turns out it's real.
Real? Huh. Yeah,
a 24-year-old woman found guilty on Thursday, that would be, I guess, this previous Thursday here, of forcing sex on a sleeping man, look at that, he was asleep, has been sentenced to 8 months in prison. By a Bergen court.
Is it just some random sleeping man or her husband, or is it something even more twisted than that? Yeah,
it looks like I think it was just like a neighbor of hers in the same block of flats where she lived.
Oh yeah, then that's weird and deserves jail time because that implies breaking and entering.
Oh, apparently the man has psychological difficulties as a result of the incident. Yeah, bullshit.
I thought there could be...
Maybe she's like a total uggo and that's his problem.
I don't know. I always heard that there's no such thing as a bad blowjob.
You know?
Unless it involved too much teeth.
Some guys like that, though.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so we have one here that says, a professional tomato fighting league has launched. And this supposedly happened in Philadelphia, which... I know it's a big thing in Spain.
Yeah, but I know the story behind that one.
Right, yeah, they have the Festival of Tomatoes. Yeah, Tomatillo. They have the Festival of Tomatoes, and they throw tomatoes at each other for some reason.
Oh, yeah, it's a funny story why it started.
Oh, do you know the story?
Yeah, I actually do.
Brilliant. Okay, tell us the story.
Okay, so these, in the 40s, late 40s, early 50s, these three teenagers, they were having the Festival of the Tomatoes, and it was part of this whole, like, festival week of kind of like the carnival in Buenos Aires. Uh-huh. No, not Buenos Aires.
No. You know,
Brazilian city. Rio de Janeiro.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Like the carnival in Rio. And for some reason there was a guy wearing white. He was very rich. This is very important. He was very rich.
Uh-huh.
So it had to be in the 50s because it was after World War II.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And so this guy's rich. He's walking around in this really nice white suit, and these teenagers are like, we got some tomatoes. There's a guy in a white suit. Let's pelt him with our tomatoes.
Yeah.
And so they did. And somehow it erupted into this huge tomato fight.
What were all the tomatoes doing in Rio de Janeiro?
Well, it wasn't in Rio. It was in Madrid or Barcelona.
Oh, okay.
We'll have to look up. This is the Spain one. Yeah, this is where it actually started. It was in Spain. Where these three Spanish teenagers.
What the hell are all these tomatoes?
Well, it was part of the tomato festival. It was actually like a tomato festival.
So they already had a tomato festival?
Yeah. They were celebrating like the tomato crop, I believe. I don't know. There was something about fresh vegetables. I'll have to look this up.
But the dude in the white suit is asking for it. You go to a tomato festival? Come on.
I'll have to look. I know the guys are still alive.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy shit, I'm going to get an interview. We got to try.
We have to get a translator because they only speak Spanish. Because I've seen the interview in Spanish. Yeah, I don't speak enough Spanish either.
Oh, I have a friend in Barcelona.
There you go. Well, we'll see if they will know the story,
too. And he used to be a translator.
Yeah.
So he could help us out. I'll try to contact him then.
So anyway, the gist of the story is they pelt this guy with tomatoes, and it's this huge tomato fight, and it erupts, and everyone has a good old time. The guy apparently doesn't know who did it, so they kind of got away with it. Then the next year, some more people were wearing white and were kind of like, yeah, we're gonna have a tomato fight. And they were like, why? Well, whatever. Somebody else started it. And then from then on, every year they started doing it. And so now the tomatillo festival, they take all of the tomatoes, usually the not so good ones that you can't really sell.
Sure.
They're not like rotten, but just some of them are. But truckloads of tomatoes. They bring them all over from Spain.
The streets run red.
They do.
Tomato juice.
And it's actually I've heard that they pre-squish them, so it's not so painful when you get hit with them. Uh-huh. So they have a big thing where you stomp on them, and that's why there's people in the trucks, because they're helping to pre-squish them so it doesn't hurt so much, and they'll splatter on you. And now it's just this huge festival.
And then after that, they V8 sales go through the roof.
Yeah.
So much to...
Yeah.
So, anyway, so our article about the professional tomato fighting league. I don't know. Like, I could see it becoming a sport, I guess, as a tomatillo thing, but not in Philadelphia. That's the thing that's sticking out to me, that it's in this country.
I don't know. There's a professional thumb wrestling circuit.
You're kidding.
Nope. Saw it on ESPN.
ESPN?
ESPN 2 or ESPN?
Oh, well, ESPN 2. Well,
but still.
Okay, then.
It was had this freaky guy in like a cape, and I don't.
That's like dodgeball.
Professional thumb wrestling, yeah.
Okay, well, it's not real.
No, Weekly World News.
Weekly World News, that one. Okay, well, I have one more here, then we'll wrap this up.
Yeah,
so, two men got busted for counterfeiting $1 bills. I mean, is anybody that stupid? Well, let me back that up. There are people who are definitely that stupid.
But wouldn't $1 bills be the most brilliant one? Because you never think of $1 bills. But if you're paying large amounts in $1 bills, it brings up some questions.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think that would be the smart way to go, but I mean, what's the fucking point? They're $1 bills. It seems like, if you're going to go through the trouble to count, if you're going to be stupid enough to break the law, be smart enough to make a huge profit doing it.
Yeah,
$1. What are you going to buy candy bars for free? You get free candy bars for the rest of your life. The cost to make the $1 bills wouldn't offset.
True.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I've never looked into this. I assume that the cost to create it would not offset the costs, you know, or the savings that you would end up with.
Well, yeah, because you couldn't take them in bank. Bank would know immediately. No. So wait, you're going to go to Best Buy and.
And then what? Like, return it for store credit? I mean, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Go to Best Buy and buy a flat screen TV and $1 bills. 5,000 $1 bills.
They'd kick you out, I think.
Yeah, I really don't think they would take it.
What? I'm a stripper. I have $1 bills.
Yeah.
No, apparently it's true, though.
Wow.
Yeah. Actually, the way they got discovered is that they went to a Home Depot, I believe, it says here. And then they tried to buy like $7 worth of light bulbs with a $100 bill that appeared to be fake. And so, and of course was. And so when the police stopped them,
and looked in their trunk, there were various denominations, including 10 fives and ones. So here's my question. If you have fives and ones and you're buying $7 worth of light bulbs, why are you paying with a $100 bill? That's just suspicious.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it? Let's go into Home Depot and buy the least expensive thing we can.
I mean, yeah, it's one thing to go to a grocery store and do that because, well, you break change at a grocery store. But Home Depot, seriously.
Maybe that. But see, maybe they thought that, nobody would think of Home Depot. Maybe that their thought was, that at a grocery store. That makes sense to do it at a grocery store. But at Home Depot, no one would suspect you.
Yeah, I think the Home Depot people are a little smarter than
that. Well, clearly they're smarter than that.
Yeah.
Not a plug for Home Depot over like Lowe's or your mom and pop hardware store or anything.
No,
but,
just happened to be
just
Home Depot.
Stupid criminals. I guess. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and if you're counterfeiting hundreds, twenties, and tens and fives, why bother with the ones?
Yeah, this is what I don't understand. I mean, because clearly, what their plan? I mean, it's obvious. Their plan was pay for $7 worth of stuff with a $100 bill and get what $93 in change of real money.
Yeah.
So why make the ones and the fives or even the tens?
Exactly.
Just make hundreds and stuff.
What, are you going to go spend the ones and get 50 cents back?
Yeah, I mean.
Build up that way? Weirdo.
It'd be a long time before you get it. Again, not enough to offset the cost of making the bills.
True. Crazy.
So let's see. We also have, what else is on our little list of things to chat about? We're getting close to time to wrap up. Well, we better play our other song here. This is called Get the Groove On, again by C-Jax, right here on Allopod.
Faster advertising. Dial-up, Wi-Fi, DSL, satellite, cable, all include pop-ups.
There's another great haiku from Andrew Burton.
I gotta meet this guy. I love his.
You've never
poetry.
Met Andrew?
No, I don't. I don't think I've ever.
Next
met
time
Andrew.
We go to Seattle, or next time I'll see if he's ever coming over. I doubt he'll come here, but although he did go to Gonzaga.
Maybe I have. No, I don't think I wouldn't have met him. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, he's a fun guy. He's really a character. But we don't have a whole lot of time. There are a couple of things I did want to mention. One of them is that our podcast, Allopod, has won an award.
Yay!
Yeah, I know. I was so surprised when I found out about this. The podcast directory called PodSpider has given us the 5-star award. And I guess somebody out there loves us.
Wow. So people are listening and they like us.
That's true. So I was very excited to hear that. The other thing I wanted to talk about was we were featured at Podcast Pickle, which is a very prominent directory.
Wow.
We were featured as Newbie of the Week, back in August. And I didn't know about this for quite a while, again, because of the email problem I discussed last time. But we were featured as Newbie of the Week, and I have a little clip here of what they said, and we're going to have to make a correction. And, well, let's listen to the clip, and we'll see why.
The Newbie of the Week.
No, Neopropecia, the hair growth drug. Uh-huh. I remember the commercial says that pregnant women should not touch broken pills.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that myself, too.
Yeah, it kind of freaks me out. And if you really listen to them, they're kind of creepy. There's a new one for, I think it's like a menopause drug or something. I don't really know. But I just know that one of the things was, if you have a uterus, these are possible side effects. And you're like, what do you mean if you have a uterus? Because at first I didn't realize it was that. A menopause drug, but I was like, kind of like, well, that's just weird and creepy.
Yeah, that is. Although I suppose in this day and age, you know, you kind of have to take that into account because some women don't.
Yeah, because there's so many surgeries because they're living so much longer. And
what's the plural of uterus? Would it be uteri?
I don't know.
Uteruses? Uterae? Uter?
Probably. I know
the plural of vagina is vaginae.
It's vagina.
A-E.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, vaginas works, but I was just reading that online the other day.
That was the newbie of the week, Olipod, show number 2093 on the podcast Pickle. Olipod focuses on the life and opinions of his creator, Thomas J. Brown, and I think that was his fiance, Emily Kratzer, in the background. The podcast serves to inform and educate listeners about the world around them, as well as make them think and question what you've been led to believe. He also does some really neat skeptical slants on the media and how they fool you. So you should go check out Olipod. That's show number 2093 on the podcast Pickle.
So Emily, when are we getting married?
I thought it wasn't legal for us to get married.
Yeah, what with you being married?
Well, and us being the same person.
Well, yeah, basically the same person. It's like incest.
Is it incest or is it like a step below masturbation?
Oh, yeah, it could be like, it's like autoerotic in some way.
Yeah, weird.
Weird. But yeah, no, so the slight correction we need to make is that Emily's not my fiance. Maura is my fiance. And actually, I think he's referring to the right person
because
he says in the background. And you can actually hear Maura in the background in the clip. But you're very prominent.
Yeah, I'm very prominent. I'm Emily.
And very much not my fiance.
No.
Not that I don't love you.
No. That I don't love you either, but it just...
I love you, Emily.
I love you too, Thomas.
And while we're talking about people loving us, if you do love us and you have a favorite podcast directory that you tend to check out things, you know, look around in those directories, go ahead and, you know, give us a vote or rate us.
Yeah.
Or, you know, some of them have voting systems. Some of them have, you know, ratings where you can, or reviews. You can write a little review. Just, you know, take a few minutes and we'd really appreciate it. And I mean, there's no way we can come and hunt you down if you don't.
Yeah.
And if you give us bad reviews, then I mean, I'd rather people be honest and give us like, you know, I think one is usually the lowest, ones and zeros, okay, and stuff like that, than fives. It's usually a 1 to 5. I'd rather people give us ones and just be honest about it than give us fives, because if I'm doing something wrong, I'd rather know, you know?
Yeah,
and again,
it would be
nice. If there's ever something you don't like about our show, please email me, podcast@alifethoughtsordinary.com. I would love to know, because I want to fix this. I want to make this the best show that I can put out.
Yeah. We want to be liked. We want to be good.
Who doesn't want to be liked?
Yeah.
We definitely want to do the best we can, though. And I mean, we're always coming up with stuff and trying to make it better. So, I don't know. Tell your friends. Give us a little vote. Write a review. Just, we're just trying to get the word out there. Spreading the love is really what Allopod is all about.
And if one of your complaints is that we say vagina way too often, tell us and maybe we'll cut it back to once every 3 months instead of once a month.
You know, I didn't realize, it was funny because when I heard that clip again, I didn't really remember that. Oh, and I should point out, in the meantime, since that was, I think, like episode 2.
Yeah.
I've actually learned the proper pronunciation of the plural of vagina is vaginae.
Yeah.
I was saying vaginae or something like that.
Vagina,
It's vaginae.
Vaginae.
Which I just think, with like an 8-year-old's coming up with this shit now.
Yeah.
I see your vaginae. No, but so I didn't want to make that correction, since I did figure that out. And if you want to say that we're great, please say that we're great.
Yeah.
And even if you don't want to tell the directories, email us, podcast@lifelessordinary.com.
We like feedback.
We like feedback. We want to get some feedback. Or you can leave comments on the show notes, which can be found at alifelessordinary.com, and click on podcast.
Yeah.
We're about out of time here. Yeah, I mean, we are out of time.
We are out of time, yeah.
Like I said, you can email us at any point in time at podcast@alifelessordinary.com. I will do my best to reply to you. And if you want to have your shout-outs... Oh, we don't have time for shout-outs. We'll save the shout-outs for next month.
Yeah.
And if you want to hear your name, go ahead and send us your name or you know, whatever you want to be called. If you want to be called Jeff and your name is really Steve, that's cool. But yeah, send us your name and where you're from, such as I'm from Spokane, Washington. So, you know, or you can be from Munich, Germany, or whatever, you know, just let us know who you are, where you're listening from. We'll definitely give you a shout out. You can visit my website, alifelessordinary.com, click on podcast and always get the show notes for all of our shows. Also download the MP3s for all the previous shows, and you can subscribe to the feed there. You can do it through iTunes. Mm-hmm. You can do it through any number of directories we can be found. And, I guess that's it for this show.
Yeah.
We'll see you in December. Again, we don't know who our interview is going to be yet, but
As soon as I know, I'll pass that information
along.
It'll
be somebody great.
I'm sure it'll be somebody great. It's always somebody great.
It is.
One more thing before we sign off, I almost forgot about it, is the word of the month from Peter Bowler's Superior Person's second book of Weird and Wondrous Words.
What's our word this month?
Our word this month, and we'll see how I can pronounce it. I'm sure I'm going to butcher it, but it's Cacorafiophobia. Cacorafiophobia, that's what it is.
Cacorafiophobia.
It's a noun. It's the morbid fear of failure. Imagine a sufferer reporting to the clinic for treatment, knowing that the first thing he will have to do at the reception desk is give them the name of his complaint. Just think about it. All right, well, for Allopod, I am Thomas J. Brown.
And I'm Emily J. Kratzer.
Remember, if you're not listening to Allopod, you don't know what I'm talking about.